Representative Sean Casten, the congressman representing the 6th District. Sean, are you on board with this?
No. I mean, look, I'm delighted that the shutdown is coming to a temporary end. This kicks the can down the road to January 30th, but it does nothing to address health care. It locks in the illegal and unconstitutional cuts that the Trump administration had made. Congress has the power of the purse, and rather than approving at historically approved congressional levels, it continues on those excesses from the White House and doesn't protect against further rescissions. So, you know, I'd like to see the government open. I'd like to make sure that we can get back to normal, and I'd like to go back to work. But, you know, this isn't taking a knife to a gunfight. This is taking a box of chocolates to a gunfight, as I'm concerned.
Have you changed your opinion of Senator Durbin because he supports it?
No, look, Senator Durbin has a long legacy and is a friend, and, you know, I'm grateful to have learned from him. That's not to say that you can't be disappointed in your friends. You know, we're going to have to clean up some stuff they did in the Senate, and I hope we'll get the votes to do it in the House. But, you know, one of the provisions in there says that if you were one of the 9 senators who had your phone subpoenaed for your potential role in January 6th, you can sue the Department of Justice and get $500,000 back per claim. So the Senate passed a bill that gives Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, Marsha Blackburn, Tommy Tuberville, Josh Hawley, just basically gives them $500,000 apiece. How do you possibly look at that and say that I take my oath to the Constitution seriously, much less that I defend a democracy? And, you know, I'm in touch with folks on the Rules Committee. We're going to work to see if we can change that. But this isn't, I don't know how to put it nicely. It's not a serious piece of legislation that came out of the Senate. It's just a form.
Yeah. And Dick Durbin did say his friends are unhappy with him. And I didn't really understand his move either, because he's on his way out. He's not running for re-election. He could have stood firm and not taken any heat for it. I feel like they had something that they needed to convince him that he needed to vote their way.
Well, look, it's not my job to be a mind reader, and I certainly don't have those skills. I think there was a time when it didn't matter which party you were in the Congress, there was a broad zone of compromise in the middle. And, you know, as we've gotten to this point where, you know, if you like Ronald Reagan's immigration policy and George H.W. Bush's foreign policy and Abraham Lincoln's civil rights policy, there's no space in the Republican Party for that right now. And I think, you know, I think among those who cut their political teeth in an era when the Republican Party was more normal, I think there's an instinctive temptation to compromise. And I don't fault that. There's expertise I don't have, but I disagree with it.
Let's talk politics a little bit. Isn't there a school of thought, or is it a legitimate school of thought, that this will, in the long run, work out for Democrats? Because if the Obamacare subsidies go away, Obamacare bills are going to skyrocket. The Democrats certainly put their stamp on trying to extend those subsidies. The Republicans did not. So that would cost them in the midterms next year.
Well, you know, as I said on a town hall a while ago, if you view the shutdowns through a political lens, you're almost guaranteed to get it wrong. We should be making sure that government looks out for all the people. We should follow Abraham Lincoln's admonition that the purpose of government is to do for the people what they can't rightfully do for themselves. And in the short term, we have done nothing to protect people against rising ACA costs. On the other hand, in the short term, you know, I guess we're going to have SNAP funded so that the White House isn't illegally withholding food assistance from people. I don't think anybody, regardless of the letter after your name, is proud of what is coming out of the White House right now, or would want to run on that record. So I think it behooves us, if we're in Washington, to try to say, how do we make this better for the American people? And if we're making things better for the American people, that's always good politics. But I think if we get caught up in well, in the short term, what's going to happen on January 30th and what's the timing of the midterms? I think there'd be demons there.
And so the ACA subsidies end on December 31st. The Republicans had said that if the government shutdown came to an end, they would negotiate in good faith on that issue. Do you have confidence that something can be achieved where there can be some bipartisan support so our health care premiums don't go sky high or they bump people out of the opportunity to have health care insurance?
Look, mark my word, there is absolutely no way that the Republicans are going to do anything on the ACA. If you fell for John Thune saying that I've got a bridge I'd like to sell you, there'll be a bunch of talk. I mean, look, they just voted yesterday in the Senate for a clean one-year extension, and it went down on a party-line basis. Johnson has said he's not going to bring that up in the House. It was not that long ago that the House voted 57 times to completely repeal the ACA. There is no consensus among the elected Republican leadership in Washington to do anything other than break the ACA. It's a nice story, but, this is very much a point where had they stapled some extension of the ACA to the continuing resolution, they would have gotten bipartisan support, and we wouldn't be having this conversation about debates in the Democratic Party.
Why do they?
Because it wasn't stapled. Because it wasn't stapled, there's just no trust.
Why are they still fighting Obamacare? I mean, it's been the law of the land for a good period of time now, and it's popular. I mean, why do they keep the fight up? Is it just a personal vendetta?
You'd have to ask them. Sometimes I think we should just call it Romneycare, since Mitt Romney invented it when he was the governor of Massachusetts.
I'm not sure that would help any. So before I let you go, will they swear in the new congresswoman, and will that force a release of the Epstein files?
Yes. Johnson has said, every time he's said about this, he said that he will swear her in as soon as we're back. It's offensive how long he's taken, but that means that we will then have 218 signatures. And that means you then start the clock. Johnson could, in theory, bring that vote up right away. I would expect he'll probably sit on it, in which case it's probably a couple weeks before the vote is forced. And then I think the most interesting thing to watch will not be the release of the files. That's sort of further down the road. But watch how many Republicans vote to release those files. Because, in the conversations I've had across the aisle, there's a small number who have signed a discharge petition. There's a lot who want to release the Epstein files. I think that's the concern that Johnson and Trump have, is that this really loses their grip on the party once that vote comes up.
Congressman, we're out of time. Lisa, I apologize, but I want to ask the question. If they are released, do you believe the Trump administration is going to release all of them or sift through them and release what they want?
It's horrible. We have to ask the question whether the Trump administration is going to comply with the law. Right? Legally, they will be obligated to release everything if we pass this. We have to wonder whether the White House is going to obey the law, because they don't have a habit of doing that. And Mike Johnson does not have a habit of doing oversight against the executive branch. But let's get the law right, and then we'll see what happens.
Thank you so much for your time, Congressman.
Thank you. Take care.
Representative Sean Casten from the 6th District.